This is Mark Strassman, reporter with Utopia Media Medical News Network. We're about to speak to Lee Morris, who's a co-founder and currently CEO of Iatrogen in Herndon, Virginia. Welcome back to Utopia Media's Medical News Network.
Thank you, Mark.
Why don't we start with the basics? What's an ADR?
ADR is an adverse drug reaction.
And how common and how dangerous are they?
Well, it's estimated that about 4.5 million Americans have serious adverse drug reactions each year, and about 100,000 of those end up dying as a result of their adverse drug reactions.
What's the best way to prevent that from happening?
Well, I think the best way to prevent ADRs is to encourage patients to communicate fully their drug and disease histories with any physician that's prescribing a new medicine for them, because oftentimes not knowing a disease a patient has or other drugs they're taking contribute to the risk of an adverse drug reaction.
So obviously it would make the most sense for each person to carry in his or her pocket a device that would list all of their medical conditions, all of their currently taken drugs, and have that available at a moment's notice for any physician prescribing them a new drug.
Well, that's correct, Mark. Patients sometimes freeze up when they have a limited amount of time to talk to their doctor and get nervous or, for whatever reason, forget parts of their medical history. If they had it written down or if they had it on some sort of device like a USB device, that the physician can look at or that they can print out and hand to their physician, this would go a long way to ensuring that the doctor gets the full picture before prescribing.
So really this is, while it manifests itself as a physiological or medical problem, it's really an information processing, storage, distribution, and access problem, isn't it?
Yes, well, that's true. You know, I believe that most all physicians licensed to practice medicine in the U.S., have good backgrounds in the adverse drug reaction risks of the medicines they prescribe. Most of the time, however, when we see a high risk of an adverse drug reaction, it's because the physician wasn't made aware of other care the patient was receiving, likely from a different physician.
Okay. So what this is all getting around to is how has Iatrogen addressed this issue and what kind of solutions has it provided for it?
Well, because the literature involving adverse drug reactions is just so large and the permutations of combinations of different drugs patients can take is so great, it's very hard to think through and consider all the possible risks. So we built a product called RxWise, which allows the consumer to enter the drugs that they're taking and the diseases or conditions they're being treated for, and to take any new medicine and to run an analysis to determine what risks of ADRs might present by introducing this new medicine into their treatment regimen, and it produces a set of advisories. These advisories both consolidate and simplify the consideration of ADR risk, and it can then be given to their doctor for their advice and directions.
Speaking of the algorithms that are used here, are these pretty much, well, complicated, cut and dried to the extent that any person taking a particular combination of drugs is likely to have an ADR, or is that also idiosyncratic and certain people can take certain dosages of certain combinations of drugs and not have a reaction, whereas someone else would?
Yes, that's exactly correct. I wish we could just say on a hard and fast way that there was a guaranteed ADR if you did A, B, or C, but each of us process, metabolize, and excrete medicines differently, and frankly have different genetic makeups as well. So the risk analysis involves issues that we can assess based on known history, and then we have to look beyond that, as a physician would through familial history and other characteristics, to best determine whether a really significant ADR exists.
So this is useful but not comprehensive as a preventative for ADR.
Well, I think what we know from roughly 30 years of doing this is that the risk for some of these ADRs is so high, given the atypical nature of the therapy that some patients are receiving, that there really is no reason to employ that type of high-risk therapy, and that there are alternatives that will achieve the same therapeutic objective but not bear such a high risk of an ADR.
But you need to know what the situation is in order to do that.
Exactly. And frankly, with 100,000 deaths a year and 4.5 million patients having ADRs, we want to see those numbers reduced. Will we be able to eliminate them altogether? Most obviously not. But we can certainly do a lot better job than we're doing today in reducing that exposure.
Okay, before we focus in on the arrangement that Iatrogen has made with the Dow Chemical Company, could you say a little bit more about how this device and system for ADR prevention that you've developed fits into the larger picture of medical IT, how it draws from it, and how it could contribute to an upgrading of the general situation in terms of telemedicine and medical IT generally?
Sure. You know, President Bush put together a panel of experts that met over the course of the last few years, recognizing how important it is to move toward electronic medical record systems for the very reason that you suggested moments earlier, that it is an information and an information transfer problem that causes a lot of these issues. And the president and this panel have embraced this concept of increasing the country's commitment to moving toward an electronic medical record.
How does the U.S., for example, in broadband, the U.S. is 16th in penetration in world competition. Where does the U.S. stand in terms of medical IT?
I would say not a lot higher than that. I don't know for exactly sure, but I know that we are far behind other developed countries, like the United Kingdom, for example, which has most all of their citizens covered today by one form or another of electronic medical records.
And, of course, they also have a comprehensive national health program under which that operates.
Of course, that does help because the government's paying physicians, so they have a bit more control over what the physicians choose to do.
I think the last time we spoke, we raised the possibility that a integrated medical IT system might provide the basis for a further development of a single-payer or other unified type of healthcare regimen in the U.S.
Well, I think what's interesting, Mark, is that with a Republican administration pushing forward an agenda to electronic medical record, these folks typically are not supporters of a unified single-payer healthcare system. So I think what's interesting is that the overriding importance of improving healthcare and making it more efficient by way of the electronic medical record has caused the administration to split this issue in two parts, electronic medical record and a unified national health insurance
system.
Focusing on the EMR part and not hoping that they don't have to bring in, I think, a unified a payer program in order to achieve a better penetration in the EMRs.
Again, as we spoke last time, I think, about some of the benefits of a EMR and an integrated system that would take advantage of it and leverage it, that would make the collection and analysis and actionability of medical information a lot more powerful than it is now, and might point to some of the inefficiencies that exist in order to siphon off lots of that healthcare money into administration.
That clearly is the administration's objective: make the system safer and more efficient, and therefore save money and retain the private payer basis of the current system that they have.
Right. I'm just sort of hinting that the technology may undermine the politics eventually if it's allowed to go ahead.
It might.
Okay. That's the general big picture. Tell us about the arrangement that Iatrogen has entered into with Dow Chemical Company to actually apply the technology that we've been talking about here.
Well, we're very excited about this opportunity. Dow, of course, is one of the country's leading Fortune 500 businesses, and operates, in our opinion, one of the most progressive health and health benefit as well as wellness program for its employees and retirees. Its senior medical officers recognize the enormous burden that adverse drug reactions can place on their employees and retirees, and believe that any program that can assist these folks in rationalizing their use of medicines is one that they want to promote. So a few months ago, we entered into an agreement with Dow Chemical to make the RxWise product available to all Dow employees and those retirees.
Okay. How many people does that mean are covered under this program?
It's about 118,000 are eligible for the product under the Dow program.
Okay. And what does each of those employees get?
Well, what happens is that we're putting on programs in each of the major cities in which Dow has a presence, introducing the technology to physicians, nurses, and pharmacists in those communities, and at the same time, introducing the Dow employees to the program. It's a voluntary program in the sense that only Dow employees who want the product, will be getting it, obviously. And if they do want it, then they simply come to our website, www.rxwise.com, and order the product through our website. They're given a confidential Dow code, which deals with the financial reimbursement requirements for the product. But this way, we can fulfill the large and geographically dispersed Dow population using the existing fulfillment mechanisms we have in place here at Iatrogen.
Is this paid for by the employee, by Dow? How does that work?
Well, we in Dow believe that it's important for the employee to pay a subsidized rate for the product, because I think, as the adage goes, if you don't have any skin in the game, you may not really be committed to using it. So by simply giving it away free in a fully subsidized program by Dow, we were afraid we would undermine employees' view of the value of it.
So you're enhancing its credibility by charging for it.
Well, that's right. If they're not willing to put some skin in the game, then it's not likely they're going to use it. Those folks, of course, who are buying it at this subsidized rate, frankly, have an investment.
Right.
And they're going to use it to get the most value out of that investment. So we think that's a good strategy to employ rather than simply a mass giveaway.
Okay. Talk a little bit more about how the Internet allows you to deliver this program to a widely scattered population of Dow employees.
Well, you know, Dow has employees throughout the United States and that are served in communities that are sometimes hard to reach. And so by employing the beautiful reach of the World Wide Web, every employee or retiree who has access to a computer attached to the Internet can get to our website, can order the product, and then have it delivered directly to their home.
Does this also apply internationally, or is it just a domestic program?
Well, it does apply internationally. Dow does have international sites as well, but we want to be careful that many folks living abroad will be exposed to medicines that are not available in the United States, and some of those medicines will not appear in our technology. So it's right now principally focused on the U.S. market and the U.S. Drug list.
Do you have an eventual goal to incorporate a global formulary, in essence, here that would include all the drugs prescribed anywhere in the world?
Actually, our representatives in Europe right now are working on a European Union version, including all medicines available in Europe, including the Great Britain. And we're hoping that if this project moves forward with the EU, we likely have a product for sale in Europe beginning in the third quarter of this year.
Okay. Do they end up ordering? Do they get a flash drive, or how does that work?
Well, interestingly, the Dow population splits about 50-50. About half the Dow folks are purchasing the flash drive, because they may not have broadband access at their homes, or they travel a lot and want the mobility of simply being able to put it in their purse or throw it into their briefcase and just use it you know, as they need it throughout their work week.
So if they want to get the little flash drive to implement this, how much does that cost them?
Well, it retails for $39.95, and then we have a subsidized program with Dow, which reduces the cost for the Dow employees.
Okay.
Now, also, the other 50% of Dow employees are electing to use the web version. These are folks who likely have good web skills and who have broadband access at their homes, and the need for that level of portability is not critical for them. So we're seeing right now about half the population is choosing the flash drive and the other half the web access.
So that means the ones that get the flash drive receive this little object in the mail, and then they plug that into their computer, and then they work with it there and store the data there. And the ones that use the web use their broadband connection to go to a central site, enter the data there, store the data there, and respectively, the users of these two formats then can convey it to their doctors either through the flash drive or by having the doctor access the website?
Well, that's true. The software supports a what's known as a HIPAA-compliant, that's a privacy, medical record privacy rules.
Right.
PDF document, which the software supports emailing directly to the patients, physicians, and or pharmacists.
Off the web or off the flash drive or
that's
both?
Right. Either one does the same, as long as they have access to the Internet in any small way. Simply a dial-up connection will support that.
Right. Can people use both if they want to sort of be redundant, or only one or the other?
Well, it would be redundant, and we would worry that the information on one
would not
link with the information on the other. So we encourage people only to get one or the other.
Okay. Can they switch if they change their mind, if they get a broadband connection later?
We have some folks who thought they had broadband coverage. It turns out they really don't, or they don't have a very large pipe to work through,
right?
And so we give them 100% credit and move them to the flash drive version.
Right, but essentially you want people to be on one or the other.
Right. We also see a lot of Dow employees purchasing this for their family members, particularly their elderly family members. We're getting reports from them who call and talk to us that they buy it for their moms and dads, and frankly, they keep it for them. That is, they keep it updated for them, and then when they do go to the doctor, it comes with a lanyard, and they simply wear the lanyard with the drive on it to the doctor's office. And then a nurse or a receptionist there at the office will print out the report and give it to the patient so they can bring it with them into the doctor when they meet with them.
Are these flash drives dedicated objects that can only be used for the RxWise program, or can people put family photographs or other documents on them?
Well, they can actually. There's no lockup, and there is plenty of additional disk space on the flash drive. So, you know, folks can use the flash drive as they would for any other purpose.
Okay. Now, what you've just talked about, where the a patient brings in the flash drive and gives it to the staff who make printouts to give it to the doctor, have you discovered, or are you doing anything about what you've found in terms of the if I might play on word on HIPAA here, the hipness of the medical staff in doctors' offices and other healthcare facilities to handle the technology here. Do they get special training, or are they sort of by default able to do these kind of things? Or what's been your experience in that area?
Well, you know, when we first were product testing the product, we went to focus groups around the country and tested its usability with and without directions. Obviously, the doctor is not going to have time to take out the little user's manual and read through it. We needed something sort of as simple to use as Google or eBay,
right,
where there are no directions. And what we found that for folks that have reasonable fluency in computer software can easily navigate and operate the software without ever looking at a manual.
Well I guess you're talking about the staff in the medical offices.
Well, we did the testing on consumers.
Right. Well, what I'm asking about is, I see that. I'm talking about the interface between the patients and the technology and the doctors, whether they all, by default, are able to deal with this.
Yes, well, that's what we're hearing. When customers call us back, they're telling us that their doctors nurse or receptionist do insert the USB drive, generate the report so that there's a fresh current report there, and then either they give it or they give it to the patient to give to the doctor when they go in for their interview.
So you're saying that goes on in every case or in most cases without any problems?
Well, it does in the context of the folks who call us and report it to us. We are scheduling a survey of all users next month.
Right.
Where we want to do what's called a satisfaction survey.
Right.
Just how is it working? You know, we also get anecdotal stories about how people's, conditions have improved as a result of eliminating conditions that turned out to be adverse effects. And we're trying to catalog these, and we're choosing an independent third party to conduct the surveys for us, requesting permission, because we can't breach people's confidentiality to report these stories
right.
without their permission. But we're hoping to be able to get their permission and begin to publish these case studies as to exactly how the drives are being used and what results people are actually experiencing.
Okay, and the doctor, for the half of the patients who are using the web-based system, do all doctors have internet connections and people who can take advantage of them to access that data from the doctor's office?
Well, actually, what we're finding is that the folks who chose the internet version are running into a wall at doctor's offices because many don't have broadband.
Right.
They use the internet perhaps for billing purposes, and because that's just a text transfer down a terminal, they really have never invested in DSL or cable. So what we're seeing is that folks who opt for the web version are discovering that they have to print the reports out at home and bring those with them to the doctor, because in most cases, from the ones who have reported to us, they're not finding adequate internet coverage at the doctor's office.
Is this serving in any way as an impetus for doctors to get broadband connections?
Well, I don't think it is yet. I think we have to have a much larger market share of those doctors' patients before economically they'll be motivated to move to better internet. But I think that it's part of a growing trend of services and information resources that doctors can access over the internet that are moving many doctors to consider upgrading their internet access to something that can support large graphic transfers.
Right, because in fact what we were talking about earlier in terms of medical IT, obviously the doctor's offices need to have broadband internet connections in order to take advantage of them, whether it's getting medical records or looking at x-rays or talking to insurance companies.
That's absolutely true. Without the connectivity to the internet, there's no data sharing.
Or to do telemedicine with their patients.
That's right. Teleconferencing as well. It does require the internet.
Or to consult with other doctors. A whole range of medical operations.
You know, in the old days, physician consultations occurred at the hospital.
Right.
Doctors met at the hospital. They talked about their patients and what about their business. Today, doctors have privileges at many different hospitals and frankly get in, see their patients, and move on to another hospital, and that collegial contact is getting rarer and rarer. So the internet is providing the conduit by which physicians can regain that interaction with each other to work collectively to improve patient care.
Okay, talk about the timetable of when you signed this arrangement with Dow and how it's being rolled out.
Well, we launched with Dow in October.
Of 2005.
Of 2005, that's correct. And they immediately, among other things, listed this as a resource on their health and wellness internal web page for all of their employees. They've also issued newsletters and letters to employees, both informing them about the risks of ADRs and suggesting that this is something that would be an important asset for them to acquire. Simultaneously with that, in November of 2005, we did the first of a series of city-specific educational programs for the community physicians, pharmacists, and nurses to educate them and to do, as you suggested, kind of familiarize them a bit with the technology so that when somebody hands them a flash drive, they kind of recognize what it is and what it's designed to do and fundamentally how to use it. So that first one was done in November We're doing the second in this series in Freeport, Texas, just east of Houston, where Dow has a large plant in March, and I believe they have also scheduled two or three others throughout the spring. So our thinking is that as we, and what we saw was a large uptake of purchases by the Dow folks in the central Michigan area subsequent to our seminars there and our meeting with physicians and pharmacists and nurses, and I think that's how we're going to see it roll out. We want to be ahead of the distribution so that we at least have done some effort to educate folks about the product and particularly the underlying science of our technology so that they understand what's going on before large numbers of patients show up with the drives.
Okay. Does the fact that Dow is a chemical company and it must have a lot of chemical engineers and scientists in it make this a particularly suitable company for this kind of product?
Well, I think more it's a function of the unyielding commitment of the medical directors and health and wellness staff at Dow to do everything they can to improve employee health and wellness. And I think that there are a lot of corporations who are building these health and wellness groups within their employee benefits group. And my sense is that, coming out of this successful experience with Dow, other employers will begin to consider adopting this technology.
Okay. Talk about what this deal has meant for Iatrogen. Is it the biggest that you've done so far?
Well, it is, though that we're currently working on one that's going to involve about 3 million patients. Unfortunately, it's a little early still, but we're hoping to have that signed in the next couple of months. But clearly to us, from a business standpoint, it represents about $3 million worth of income on the initial purchase. Mark, you may remember that we include for free the updates to the flash drive and website for the first year. And then after that, purchasers can continue to subscribe to the updating service, which is about $19 a year. And so the Dow opportunity represents about a $3 million opportunity for us out of the box, depending on what the penetration is. And then after that, it would yield about $1.5 to $2 million in revenue a year based on the subscription levels that we achieve.
So based on that, I want to ask, is Iatrogen publicly traded or
no,
privately
it's
held?
No, very tightly held private company. And I think that although we've been very successful in being involved in two earlier public offerings, we want to be sure that we've well established this business and its objectives and its mission before we turn it over to public managers. We want to be sure we've established exactly who and how we're going to serve our population.
Okay, we've established pretty much how this does serve the individuals involved. What benefits are going to accrue to Dow as a result of signing up for this?
Well, of course, we're very hopeful that that's a significant benefit to them. We have measured for many companies in studies that we've done looking at their insurance claim data that between 5% and 7% of all hospitalizations an employer pays for are the result of adverse drug reactions. And our previous technologies have demonstrated about a 50% reduction in these ADR hospitalizations.
So if you've got a 50% reduction of 6 to 7%, you're going to get a 3% reduction in
medical
costs.
Hospital budget.
Right.
So if you think of a hospital budget as being $1 billion or more for a reasonable-sized employer like Dow, you're not talking about chump change. And that's the underlying business motivation. So I must admit to you that Dow's willingness to be the first of our corporate partners in this was not based on return on investment analysis that we were able to give them, because we don't have that for this product today, but rather their commitment to the basic concept that improving pharmaceutical use and reducing adverse drug reactions was just good business anyway. We're hoping, though, that when they do, and they will obviously do, a post-implementation comparison to their hospital cost the year before, I hope and I think they're hoping that they'll see a substantial savings in that particular area.
What you're saying is it could potentially pay for itself.
Oh, well, it'll pay for itself several times over. But remember, in this case, the patient is paying the large bulk of the cost of this product.
Right.
And so from Dow, they're going to have a healthier workforce. They're going to have reduced absenteeism and reduced physician visit costs and reduced hospitalizations by reducing the rate of adverse drug reactions among their employees and retirees.
Okay, I think that pretty well covers that. Before we go, I wanted to get your comment on a related issue, if you've got another minute or two.
Sure.
Obviously, the new Medicare drug benefit has created a lot of havoc. I'm wondering if, from your point of view, you can see how some of the medical IT technology that you're familiar with or that you already use might be leveraged to resolve some of the outstanding issues here, because in fact this is in fact another drug utilization question, and that's sort of what you're dealing with already. And I'm wondering whether there are any ways in which some of your technology might be applied to resolve some of the outstanding issues over there on that side.
Well, Medicare certainly has bitten off a big bite. And they've unfortunately bitten off a big bite within a particular demographic of this country that is singularly at the greatest risk for adverse drug reaction, and that is the infirmed elderly. These folks already have significantly reduced renal function, liver function, respiratory function, all of the mechanisms that the body typically uses itself of drugs. And now these poor folks are being told that the spigot is opening, and now they can for the first time all those drugs that they've always wanted to take at significant discounts. We're a little disappointed, and we're amongst a growing group of organizations around the country that are disappointed that the government's focus on the controls and checks to avoid elderly patients taking compromising medicines is really not well defined in the government's scope of work for its contractors, and pretty much relegated to the back burner. Understandably, they're overwhelmed with implementation issues and problems. As you know, perhaps as much as millions of patients have been denied access to medicines because of difficulties in getting eligibilities correctly listed in the new Medicare Part D databases.
Right.
And so they're focused on putting out those fires. But I think that lurking in the background here is a significant liability. That is, as these patients take more medicines, have greater incidences of adverse effects, and greater rates of hospitalization to treat those adverse effects, the Part A component of Medicare, which is the part that pays for hospital costs, are going to rise precipitously. And therefore, the government's policymakers have to realize that at the end of the day, the cost of providing drugs to the elderly may be the smaller part of the pie, because they may incur expenses on the hospital and physician side to treat adverse effects, which ultimately dwarf the cost of the medicines themselves.
So what I understand from the Chinese character for crisis is danger and opportunity. It sounds like we've got both here.
I think so. And you know, I think if we give the government policy folks the benefit of the doubt, they're taking it one step at a time, because the effort is such a large one. But they are going to have to come to grips with the fact that reducing the patient's out-of-pocket expenditure will typically result in an increase in utilization of medicine, which then increases the risks of an adverse effect. And we yet don't see evidence of an institutionalized embrace of any technology to materially reduce that risk.
Well, it sounds like they ought to embrace your technology, shouldn't they?
Well, ours or others, I suspect, but I think that right now the mandate to do that, most of the insurers and pharmacy benefit managers that are running these programs are responding to the mandates that are in their contracts. And if the mandate to do this is not in their contracts per se, then they're not going to voluntarily go out and seek and evaluate these technologies and bring them in.
Well, shouldn't some member of Congress or some committee of Congress get on this right away instead of allowing this sort of to be a vast experiment in which increased drug use leads to increased hospital costs and the whole program costs more money and causes more trouble than it's worth?
Well, you know, I would hope that indeed congressmen or aides to congressmen that listen to your interviews might pick up that message, but Congress has had a difficult time grappling with the complexity and enormity of Part D, and I'm leery that they won't really have the ability to make major changes to that legislation or major mandates for controlling those costs in the near term.
The Senate Majority Leader is a transplant surgeon. He probably
well,
understands these issues.
He's a Harvard-trained physician as well, and my understanding is an excellent physician.
I'm sorry?
I say he's a Harvard-trained physician
as well,
and I understand he's an excellent physician.
Right.
And so I think the concept is one that...
Well, as they say of Harvard-trained physicians, you can tell a Harvard-trained physician, but you can't tell him much.
Perhaps.
Okay. Well, I want to thank you for talking to us today about medical IT technology, about iatrogen and its deal with a Dow Chemical Company, and about some of the still unresolved issues that this technology has an opportunity to address if it gets the chance.
Well, Mark, thank you for giving us the time to talk to you, and I'll look forward to our chat again when we have another big announcement.
Okay, good. Thanks very much.
Yes, sir.
Okay, bye.